This episode is brought to you by Squarespace at squarespace.com. Get a beautiful portfolio, blog, website, online store, and more. Get a free trial without a credit card even. If you decide you like it, use the code CURRENT at checkout and save 10% on your next order at squarespace.com.
I have
CURRENT GEEK!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, and I'll tell you what it is. It's the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you to become or keep you current on the things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That guy's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
I am confused. It's Thursday.
What?
I usually feel like Current Geek, it's the kicking off of the weekend, which I guess it's just a long weekend.
In a way, it is. We want to wish a very happy wedding to Snubs this weekend.
Yeah, and I will be performing the marriage. You did that recently, didn't you?
I did, but I forgot. I didn't know you were performing it. I thought you were just going again. This is two for you now.
Yeah.
Oh,
one
my
every
gosh.
Summer.
Two of my favorite nerd ladies in all of San Francisco, both getting married by one Tom Merritt. That's fantastic.
I only perform weddings for hosts of Techzilla.
All right. Nice. Well, Roger Chang, the ball's in your court, buddy. Oh, wait.
He's already married.
Yeah, that's true.
He got married by Elvis.
That's true. Oh, yeah, that's right. Last year. Congratulations, all these months later. It's Thursday, June 12th, 2014, and it's a brand new show, and I am happy to bring our guests in. Let's start with You Know Her, You Love Her. She is one third of the Angry Chicken podcast. If you're into Hearthstone, you know exactly what that is. She does many other things. You'll get to meet her in July at Nerdtacular. Her name is Jocelyn Moffitt, and she's here right now. Jocelyn, hi.
Hi, how's everybody tonight?
We are fine. Right, Tom? Fine?
I am. I am a big fan of Eye for an Eye. I'm very excited to have Jocelyn along.
Cool. Well, welcome to the show. Also coming here is the person without which I would not probably do Nerdtacular anymore. I need her now. I need her to do what she does. She runs the entire thing. She also runs like a really cool video game department at the University of Utah. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Corinne Lewis to the show.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great.
I've known Corinne since I was 20, right?
Yeah, I think we were trying to figure that out a little while ago. It's got to be 22 years or something like that.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Because it would have been a couple years before Taylor was born. Taylor is now 20. So yeah, 22 years. There you have it. That makes me feel old. But Corinne is the showrunner for Nerdtacular, and it's a huge deal that she is involved in such a way. But she's also a huge nerd, and that's good for the show.
I really prefer El Presidente as my title.
All right. Well, we will fix that next time.
El Presidente de Geeks.
Indeed. So let's roll right in. Early show. Why not early news?
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Take it away, Tom.
Cute little baby radio. Kay Boughton 1 submitted this story on our Current Geek subreddit, by the way. If you haven't gotten in there and helped select the show's stories, do so at currentgeek.reddit.com. Amazon Prime's new streaming service, which has curated playlists and old songs, unless they were popular on Universal Music, in which case those aren't on there either, is launched. But it's free, so stop criticizing.
Isn't it a good start, though? I mean, yeah, it sucks that we've got big holes in the library, but they got to go. Yeah. They got
to
start.
I mean,
someplace.
I guess it's not free. You have to have Amazon Prime, but you don't have to pay any more if you already get Amazon Prime.
Mm. So I would just say at the top of this that this is the era of new streaming services. It seems like they're popping up left and right. The success of Spotify, RDO, and other services, Pandora to some degree, have certainly sparked this move. I also think users who just want to get stuff on the fly and quit worrying about managing files and moving things around are driving this change in the music industry. It also ensures or helps ensure less piracy. If more people are using these services, there's less pirating going on, and there's money going around. There's still arguments.
Yeah, piracy in music doesn't seem to be an issue anymore. It's always about video now.
Yeah, not really anymore. I mean, I don't feel like we learned any lessons from that time so much, or the videos, the video problem isn't learning lessons of the music problem, but regardless of that, it's a whole different argument. I would just say, I don't know why Apple is so slow to this game. That's the really weirdest thing about this. You can be an Apple fan or not, but you still have to scratch your head and go, Apple changed music and the way we consume it at the very core of it with iTunes. Enough time has passed now that we're now moving into streaming services as being the norm, and they are way behind. iTunes Radio is not the answer. Not yet. I don't know what their plans are to do with that, but I feel like they are way, way behind. And I guess they just bought Beats Audio or Beats Music.
It's not finalized yet, but they're going to.
Sure. So assuming they end up with that music service that comes along with the whole hardware business, maybe that's their play and they're going to
committed an internet foul.
What have I done?
There are lots of people out there throwing yellow flags at you, World Cup style, because you just turned an Amazon story into an Apple story.
No, I hate. No, I don't even like doing that. I don't even like that I did that. That's terrible. All right, fine.
10 yards.
Fine. We're throwing it to our guests then. So, Jocelyn, how do you feel about Amazon as a music streaming service? Do you want it? Do you hate it? What do you think?
I have the same problem with every streaming service, whether it be audio or video, and that is that I live in Canada. And very, very, very rarely do we get the same content. So the only streaming service that we actually subscribe to is Netflix. And even then, content, not so hot.
Well, also that came really late too, right? Weren't you guys waiting a very long time to even get basic Netflix? And even now the movies and the TV selections aren't exactly the same anyway, right?
They're not even close. Half the time I get friends like, oh my God, did you hear this really cool things on Netflix? And I'm like, oh, not in Canada.
So what does one do about that in Canada? I mean, is it all piracy up there? I mean, you guys are all so nice and you say sorry a lot, but do you just pirate everything or what?
We just kind of make do with Canadian Netflix and think it's awesome because we don't know what American Netflix is like. So it's like living in this just naive bubble.
Yeah.
They just go take some more of that codeine Tylenol that you can get at the drugstore.
That's true. That's over the counter.
They have a lot of that there. I didn't know that. Karim, what do you say about Amazon getting into the fray?
Well, I've had Prime forever, I think since the second it was announced. And so I like that they're adding stuff, but I have never found a curated playlist did anything for me. I must have more eclectic tastes than people. I don't know. It's like all the Spotify stuff. I have that. We have, actually I can't think of a service that we don't have because I live with someone who is always getting stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think it's free. It's fine. Whatever. I mean, it's free, right?
Well, free if you're a Prime subscriber, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it always has that weird thing for us because we have a shared Prime account, myself and Eileen, my wife.
Yeah.
And so she is the only one who can access this bonus stuff. I get the free shipping on my Amazon account, but I don't get any of this stuff.
Oh, that's interesting. So when I... Oh, yeah. So I guess if you're just using the same account straight up, same login, same everything, then you're just... It's as if you're the same person. But in your case, you've got two accounts.
Spotify. So it's like... I guess this is okay. I guess I'll have to wait and see. I mean, I know that that's probably a non-answer, but it just seems like if they don't have what I want to listen to, it's about as good as Apple iTunes radio for me, which I have found to be completely useless.
Yeah.
I mean, we use Spotify constantly and I use Pandora. I've got, I listen to Pandora. I also listen to a bunch of like one-off weird, like public radio shows that are online now. And so I don't know. I guess it just depends on what's there. If it's just Rolling Stones, that's not going to work for me.
I really like RDO. I feel like they've got the kind of music I care about, but I'm with you on the whole curation thing. I don't think that stuff really works. Doesn't work for me at all. And they try to do this with Netflix and everything else where it's like, oh, we're going to recommend stuff we're pretty sure you're going to like. But, just the fact that I watch films or do film sack movies alone destroys and I know I can make another account and try to get that all figured out to have the sub account thing where it's all, just a film sack account, but I don't know.
So you don't have to see all the zombie movies.
Right.
So,
right.
Or all the horror stuff. But I also watch a lot of kids stuff, which is like, they must think I have children because I'm constantly getting added, recommended that. So I don't know. I don't think it all works out well yet.
Yeah.
The algorithm's not there yet.
None of these sites are passing the Turing test. We'll say that much, Tom.
There are no Ukrainian 13-year-old boy.
That's right.
Yeah. Which is a reference to the alleged Turing test passing.
Yes,
chatbot.
I say this all the time, by the way. That's just
for those
phrase.
Who thought that was some sort of political statement about Russia. No.
No. Just inappropriate timing. That's all. That's all.
You know what's in bad shape, Scott?
What?
Besides the peace in the Central Asia, Harrison Ford's ankle.
Oh, my gosh.
Injured by a garage door that had fallen at Pinewood Studios, and he was airlifted to John Radcliffe Hospital.
Now, You're telling me, hold on, let me just get this straight. You're telling me that the British tabloid paper link that I read that said he was crushed under the weight of part of the Millennium Falcon was not true? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I don't know personally. Haven't been there. But the reputable links that I've seen from, like, you know, places like the BBC, who interviewed the actual medical professionals involved, said that they responded to a call at Pinewood Studios for a 71-year-old who had been injured in an incident involving a garage door. So I don't know. Maybe the Millennium Falcon has a garage door attached to it and that fell off.
Well, okay. So the one I read was on the Mirror, and they showed a picture of an emergency airlift helicopter that was not actually the one used there at all, but made it seem like he was airlifted out of something that the words were literally crushed in the headlines. So I freaked out for a minute because I thought, No. All this goodwill, all of this effort by Disney and Lucasfilm and everybody to get this right this time, to get all these actors back, to do this incredible reboot of many Star Wars films to come. We cannot mar this thing with the mangling or death of a beloved character actor or a character or the actor playing him in this case.
He's not a character actor.
No, he's not.
But I know what you meant.
But that would have been terrible. So my gut reaction was exactly what they wanted with this link bait, which is to freak me out.
Right.
But a little more digging and everything was fine.
Can I ask a question about that?
Of course.
So do you have a garage door?
I do.
I can't get anywhere near that thing without it going, and going back up again.
Well, maybe it was a different kind of like storage, because it was on set, wasn't it? Or
something? I would assume on the set, it's a manual garage door that they use to open up.
For it to grab some coffee pods from the cantina that's in the garage.
The studio probably has garage doors where they bring set pieces in and out.
Okay, so it's like a gigantic door and it doesn't have the little tool, you know, thing on it that so people don't get crushed.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Something went wrong, right?
Yeah.
I'm confused. I want more details.
He's a little thin. Yes. He didn't set the thing off. That's all. He's a little thin, a little frail in his older age.
Actually, what I think is Chewie was upset at losing at chess and threw the garage door at him.
That thing came down. That was it. Jocelyn, what's his prognosis? How do you feel?
Well, I read the same article that you tweeted out because I was just like, oh my God, we're having Harrison Ford. And by the time you get to the end of the article, then they do say, oh, it may just be an ankle injury of some kind of thing.
But it's such dirty pool, though, God. The way they did that. It's just so baity.
Kids, take a lesson from Current Geek. Careful about your sources when you're reading news on the internet.
Yeah, even then, I still sometimes will defer to Tom, like text him or something and say, am I reading this right about Bitcoin? Somebody bought a Bitcoin and it exploded in the back of their Honda, and he'll say,
yeah,
that's not how Bitcoins work, Scott. Let me explain. And it's calming. It's kind of nice. Makes me feel better.
Well, and the BBC has a really good article.
Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah. But he's done. He has on the show before.
I know. That's what I'm saying is he's the only person I've ever heard actually explain it that made sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Good job, Tom.
I still don't get it.
I've heard a lot.
Oh, my God.
Hey, let's take our mind off these Han Solo worries and content decisions. Rob Stack pointed us to a page on Diply from Trendy Joe, speaking of being careful of your sources, collecting Star Wars puns that you've been looking in Alderaan places for.
That makes me so happy.
My fave was the Darth Vader. I find your lack of bass disturbing.
Oh, wow. How about the Adobe Wan Kenobi? I like that one's all right. That's a new clone tool.
For you prequel fans, sale at the mall. Everything's half off.
Oh, my gosh. Corinne, you side with consternation. You're not a fan of the pun?
Oh, one of my favorite books of all time is called Get Thee to a Punnery.
Wow. I've not heard of that.
It's very funny. It's also like silly. Puns are silly, right? So, I think the Darth Vader one's actually pretty intelligent.
Really? So, I like a good pun. If you've read my comic in the last almost 14 years, you will agree that I seem to be enamored with puns. I do it all the time. In fact, comic up right now about Doctor Who and the TARDIS is a total pun and a play on words. Jocelyn, you seemed excited. Is this something you'd want to dig deeper into?
I love this. This made me like the whole Ham Solo thing. I was like, ah. Yeah,
it's like we're all twelve again. You know, it's great.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
I Am Sci-Fi in the chat room wrote Han fell first.
Oh, yeah. No, he'll be okay. It's just an ankle. I keep thinking he was crushed. Yep, everything's fine. It's just an ankle.
He's in perfect hibernation.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of the Carbonite jokes today and all sorts of stuff. I mean, I guess we can all be glad that this was mild enough that we can joke about it. And
sure.
And
they said that he probably won't delay shooting even, that they could adjust the schedule.
Well, and this is a guy who, you know, if you remember Temple of Doom? Well, no, in Raiders, he had like the worst diarrhea of his life and was like fighting and having. And we got that great scene where the sword dude comes out flipping the sword around. And he just shoots him instead. That iconic moment was mainly based on him being so tired and dehydrated and just out of it. And then I guess on Temple of Doom, his back was out like all the time. It was in severe pain and had to lay down anytime they weren't, you know, anytime they would cut, he would just have to lay down.
So
the guy's tough, man. He can get up there and do what he has to do. It's great.
All right, let's shift gears. Oh, I'm sorry. What was that?
I was going to say he's a little older now. That might be more of a factor.
Could be. Alan McBeal has softened him up. Anyway, yes, Tom, go ahead.
Mr. Bruick tipped us off on subreddit to the Oh Heck Yeah Immersive Street Arcade going on right now until July 26th in Denver. So if you're Brian Ibbett or someone like Brian Ibbett, you can probably get there. Two city blocks will be full of street art and custom structures. Games will allow players to use their bodies as controllers while the game is displayed on the huge Denver Theater District LED screens.
So what's the use your body? So what, like a Kinect thing or something? Or
yeah, they're using Microsoft Kinects, exactly, to track the players.
Okay. I mean, it's one of those things where it celebrates video games, but it's not so much about, you know, having a meaningful play experience probably. But I would, that seems like fun. I'd go if I was him. I wonder if this is to coincide. It's this weekend, is it? No,
yeah,
July 26th.
It's going on now. I think it started on the 7th, maybe.
Oh, but it's still going. All right.
Yeah, it's going on like all the way through the end of July.
All right. Well, Denver Comic-Con is this weekend. So if you're in Denver and you're already going to be doing that, why not swing by and give it a shot? I'd do it. Sounds like fun. Corinne, you do all kinds of... So she helps run this like game department at the U of U where they make video games. They churn out students who are writers, designers, developers, artists, whatever. And it's an amazing program. And highly regarded, and lots of developers end up sort of farming new recruits and stuff from there. You guys seem to be involved in a lot of this kind of thing where you're sort of trying to push games further or more, I don't know, public consumption of game.
Yeah,
game
we have
stuff.
The luxury to do that. I mean, game companies are focused on other things. So as an academic, we get to play a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I've seen two examples of something like this before. One was at the EMP Museum in Seattle. There's the sci-fi exhibit in the basement. I think it's the basement. And actually, maybe it was the horror side. Anyway, we were just there a little while ago, and you got to play in front of something that was sort of like a Kinect. I don't think it was a Kinect. But and then the other one I saw was like in line at a Disney World, because like it was at Disneyland or Disney World, in line waiting for a ride, you got to play a big game, and it was kind of, they were using something. But we've used the Kinect here, and actually Sony Move too, for lots of different kinds of things. So I'd love to see that, because we're always, you know, our faculty and my staff, we all go all over the place all the time, and we're always looking for these kinds of things, because we always like to throw really complicated, weird tech at our students. Yeah. So I'd be interested to see that for sure. Well, I think it's fun.
Like you said, as an academic, you guys get to experiment a little bit more and do, you know, weirder things that you may not be able to do if you're EA or somebody who's focused on deadlines and budgets and everything else. You guys can kind of go, well, how about this new way of doing a thing? And let's play around with that. And the students will get some sort of experience out of that. That seems like a very freeing thing for the industry in general, where it's a little bit more locked down otherwise.
Well, and it's true. We've had massive problems with the Kinect, though. So we, you know, but we always push tech way harder than I think that it was meant to do. Our engineers, our engineering students, because we have an undergrad and a grad program, so our grad students are always, you know, really trying to make things do things that are not meant to be done. I think the Kinect 2 we're having more luck with, so I hope that's what they have.
Yeah, we'll see, right? We'll get more. Yeah, we'll talk more about Kinect 2 and all that stuff coming up later, because I have a lot to say about all that stuff when we get to our E3 coverage. That'll be nice.
You're going to go to Denver, Jocelyn?
Yeah.
No. Denver's really far.
Hey, not as far as Salt Lake, but hey, here you are. Going to be here in a couple of weeks.
But see, I have a really good reason to go to Salt Lake, and I have a really good reason to go to BlizzCon. And as cool as this whole Denver thing sounds, that's a lot of West Coast trips for me.
Yeah, that'll add up, because you're way on the other side. My notion of where everyone's located in Canada is a little bit skewed, but you're way, way east, right?
Well,
I'm a whole other time zone past New York.
Okay. Wow, really? Whoa.
Yeah.
So you're, oh my, it's late there. That's fine.
It is. Yeah, it's 8:30.
Goodness. All right. Well, thanks for being here at 8:30 on a Thursday night.
I know. You just caught me. I was going to go to bed, but I was like, no, Scott needs me.
Thanks for staying up.
Yeah.
No problem.
No, I do wish more cities would do this. I hope it works out for Denver and other cities take a cue out of this, because it sounds like a lot of fun and a lot of cool stuff going on there.
Agreed.
Remember that weird channel on YouTube called WebDriver Torso that we talked about?
We did. I talked about it on this show, I believe. Yeah.
And Gadget found that WebDriver was part of a network called Y-Tupload Tested Partner _Torso, like YouTube upload, which in turn was associated with social media accounts that name dropped a bunch of Google employees based at its Zurich office. So Engadget confronted Google with the evidence of this important mystery. And in an official statement, Google said, "We're never going to give you uploading that's slow or loses video quality. And we're never going to let you down by playing YouTube in poor video quality." And one of those WebDriver Torso videos had a silhouette of Rick Astley. And they said, "That's why we're always running tests like WebDriver Torso." Pretty much confirmed.
It was them the whole freaking time.
Yeah. They do it to ensure video quality. And somebody just discovered it. And they thought it would be funny to let the mystery play out, I guess.
Why not? I mean, you know. I kind of had a feeling anyway, and I think we may have had a theory on the show that they may have been behind it or somehow were connected, but let the mystery now die. This is like finding out the Bigfoot guy just made plastic feet and walked around the forest, you know, because there's still going to be
finding out the Bigfoot guy was actually a Seattle area costume company.
Yes. Yes.
And they finally admitted it.
Even more so. I'm a big fan of, cryptozoology. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Like Bigfoot and all that. That stuff's great, but I don't believe in any of it. But I think it's funny when, for example, there's probably somebody out there who's still not buying this. There's still some conspiracy in their mind. Just like here locally, we had a UFO sighting that made all the news channels. Corinne, I don't know if you remember this, but it was a big deal. And everybody talked about like it was totally up there and they had all this proof and people were saying, "Oh, this is it. This is it. And isn't it great they came here and all this?" I know the guy who did it. He came to me and said, his name's Andrew Smith. He's an amazing kinetic artist here locally and does amazing work. And he said, "Yeah, it was totally me." And he showed me how he did it and some of the ways he got away with it. And still there are people here still who, even though he admitted it and he even called those stations and said, "I did it," there are still people who think those were real UFOs.
Sure you did. You're covering.
Exactly.
You totally sounds government. Like a made-up name. Smith? Come on. Smith.
Whose name is Smith? I know. That seems so fake. But
it's like crop circles on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So I don't know. I feel like, and those videos are still on YouTube, and there are still people in the comments who are totally buying it. So it just goes to show. I'm not sure what it has to do with this article so much, except to say, If you do a good hoax and people are totally buying into it, even if it's just kind of a mystery like this, there are people who will carry it to their grave.
And that's why you don't need to DRM your content.
Exactly. Solved the problem.
Kind of the same.
Yeah.
Our final story is thanks to Magoo JC, who submitted the story about Michael Thomason. He holds the Guinness World Record for the largest video game archive. It includes full catalogs for platforms, including Dreamcast, Saturn, Virtual Boy, and Lynx. And he's selling it. He's selling this whole collection due to family commitments. He didn't want to sell it, but he feels like he has to. So he put it up on Game Gavel, and you have until June 15th to bid on it. Last I looked, it was somewhere above $750,000.
Oh my gosh, look at his shelves. Okay, so Corinne, this made me think of you big time because you're the school and then the department up there. You guys have crap everywhere, old Atari stuff and everything.
Crap.
Yeah, none of it's crap. It's all good. That's what I meant.
You have stuff that could be worth $750,000 everywhere.
Yeah, you want to sell it?
I would accept a donation for that. We want to curate a collection like this. And oh my gosh, if only that we had somebody who had that much money that wanted to donate that to us, that would be awesome.
Well, I know you guys have the one I want, which is that old Magnavox.
The Odyssey.
Yeah, they have one there in the office. It's so awesome.
Nice.
Oh, I know.
It's really cool. You know, part of why we want to do that is because a lot of people who come to us, a lot of students, have never played a Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
They've never even seen a Pong machine. Mm-hmm. We have one in our studio. And so it's like they don't have an understanding of where things came from. And, you know, if you're a history person, you know, without understanding history, you don't know really what's it sparks creativity because it helps them understand what was possible. And it also is super cool for me to get to play with.
Yeah.
So
Jocelyn, do you feel like preserving the history of these things is important? I mean, obviously this guy was doing it because he was a fan of this sort of thing, but just from a historical perspective, how important will, you know, the varied history of video games be in 10, 20 years or whatever?
I think it's so important. I mean, I think Corinne really just hit the nail on the head there with the talking about the students having no idea. I mean, like, I'm sitting here just like, oh, they've never played a Nintendo 64. I'm like, oh, yeah, check that box. I did that. And then never even seen a Pong machine. Oh, I've never seen that. And it, like, I'm a really, really big gamer and I'm into all of these things. But there are some that I just have no idea where they came from. Like, I jumped in kind of in the mid-90s. And there's so much that happened before that that I'm only just getting bits and pieces of now. And I think that in any kind of cultural setting, whatever it is, whether, you know, like movies or religion or that, I think that they're all very, very important to where we are now. And we need to preserve all of these kind of things. I think it's amazing that some private collector did this for so long. I can't believe that someone has like $750,000 to take it all off his hands, but yeah. Well, I think it's really important.
If you got a ton of money, why not? The collection consists of 10,607 total games, and they've all been verified by Guinness, and he now holds the record. I hope he makes.
Are they going to change the name on the certificate when he sells the collection? Because that's what I would really want. It'd be like, yeah, I'm a Guinness record holder, not like the dude that used to have it.
I really hope a school buys this stuff. Like, there are definitely schools that have a lot of money. And so, you know, it needs to go someplace that is not going to just be a storage unit for somebody so people can't look at it and see it and play it, I hope.
Yeah. They've even got like the Leapfrog stuff in here, all those different models, the ZX Spectrum from Sinclair from way back in the day. Like, this is crazy to me, but I just want to go visit the guy. I don't need it all. I just want to see it once. And then anybody else with the money can just buy it, I guess. But
the
there
current
you go.
Bidder is peeps_10091970.
Wow.
Who has
That's
bid
probably
several
not
times.
An educational institution.
Sure. No. Peeps University.
Yeah.
Somehow doesn't sound very academic, does it?
Well, Peeps and Catch 123 have been in a bidding war since June 11th.
You know who will win? The one that makes those sweet marshmallow yellow things you eat at Easter time. Peeps is going to win. All right. Well, there's your news. Today's ad is just this simply, folks. I want you out there to go check out HelloFresh.com. And you go there by going to HelloFresh.com. That seems easy. It does, right? It is easy. Go to HelloFresh.com. Order what they've got. It's amazing farm fresh ingredients. It's all the stuff you need to make something wonderful. And they'll send the farm fresh ingredients straight to your house. You make the meal in 30 minutes or less. And it's awesome. Please go check them out. I'm going to give you the morning stream code because I'm told that the current geek one is maybe not totally active yet. So for now, use morning stream at checkout for 50% off new customers at HelloFresh.com. We appreciate their support of the show.
In case you missed a look at one of the best dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
I have. but I have not had enough of E3. Or maybe I have. Maybe I've had enough of E3 at this point of the week.
It's still going on, yeah, technically.
Still happening. But it's definitely, I mean, we're in the wind down phase. It's a lot of appointments. There's no big announcements left, really. Nobody's held off till the end of the week to suddenly spring something on us. But, you know, a lot of stuff going on and a lot of controversy. There always is every year. And it doesn't always just come from, oh, wow, Sony's press event wasn't very good, or Microsoft should have announced this or whatever. Sometimes it comes from other things. There's a big freak out that Ubisoft and the developers of Assassin's Creed basically said, we didn't have the time or the resources necessary to make female characters to run around in your co-op group.
Can I swear on this channel?
I cannot wait to hear what you say about this, because you like video games, and B, you're one of the most what's the word? I don't want to say you're pro women. We all are, but you're.
But she is a woman.
She's connected to issues related to, you know, that kind of stuff. And so when Corinne, I feel like Corinne has some authority in that, but the bottom line, or the short of it was, and I don't want to get this wrong, but one of the animators or somebody said, well, it really represents like a couple of days of work, so I don't know why.
I've got it on line 25 there, if you want the actual quote.
Oh, do we have a quote? Let's see. Yeah. 25, here it is. Assassin's Creed Unity creative director Alex Amancio said that while they were originally planning to include female assassins, the reality of production made adding the additional characters too costly. The problem is they've got an animator working on the project or has in the past said it's not more than a day or two of work. It's not a big deal, and that they're making, that's a poor excuse for why they chose not to do it. So Corinne, just what do you think on this issue? Well,
so I have as much authority as Jocelyn does, because we're both women.
Yep.
And we both play games, but first of all, that's bullshit. I'm sorry. It's just bullshit. It's that if you know how to make a video game, maybe they're just assuming that everybody in the press doesn't actually know how to make a video game. Okay, fine. Modeling a different body is fine,
yeah,
but it does take time. But these are Ubisoft artists. They are fantastic at their jobs. So that just rings so hollow to me. I can't even believe it.
Well, they have a whole other Assassin's Creed title that features a female protagonist who is, I'm not saying they can just lift the animation and character art from that, but I am saying they know how to do it.
Yeah, the additional thing that I read about it was that they feel like they are following through on a narrative arc, which is my soapbox of all soapboxes for games. So I get that. It's fine. It's not like I need to have Harry Potter be a girl. You know, it didn't have to be Harriet for me to understand and be involved in it. But it's what I was so excited about Unity was there's four of them,
mm-hmm,
right? We can play one girl. Come on. And we all know guys like to play girls because they like to look at their behinds. You've heard that forever.
So they say.
That's what they say.
Yeah. I whatever. It's just, it drives me bananas that they can't. I don't know.
Here's the only problem. I don't even have that much problem with the fact that they don't. It's that they made this dumb excuse. I just wish they would have said, yeah, we thought about it. We changed our, you know, we decided not to. Didn't feel like it was the right direction for the game. Like that or hate that, that would have been an honest answer.
I thought the narrative thing was actually a better answer to this.
Sure. Why not?
I suppose it's possible that this Alex, whatever, Amancio, I guess is how you say his last name. Maybe he just got caught in the middle. You know how that is. It's like, you know, some reporter's in your face and you're just trying to say something. But they, you know, they're 50%. It's like, I can't even get out what I want to say. 50% of the population of, you know, so if you look at the ESA statistics, the Electronic Software Association, 94% of girls play games. 99% of guys play games. Boy, that's not a lot of difference in the percentages, right?
Mm.
So come on. Yeah. Just, you know, I love Lara Croft. I love the reboot. Great. But that's one.
Yeah. You know? Everyone keeps using that as an example. It's kind of funny.
Yes.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. And Jocelyn, I'm going to throw this one to you and I want to hear your opinion, but here's my devil's advocate on this point. What if I said, all right, we've decided there's co-op in the new Lara Croft game, the new Tomb Raider. And, we were going to have a dude option in there, but last minute we were like, oh, we don't have time. So it's just going to be girls. You can choose between a couple of girls. Would anyone be talking about this? if that was the case. Again, it's devil's advocate. You know, I'm not saying I agree with my point. I'm just saying. All right.
I don't know. I don't think that everyone would be so up in arms. I think that the women in gaming conversation is really prevalent right now. I am on the same page as you, Scott, and I tweeted out shortly after I heard about this that I was just like, you know, I don't want women shoehorned into things, or in the Lara Croft example, I don't want men shoehorned into things just because of their sex. But at the same time, like, lack of resources is just a disgusting, awful excuse.
Yeah.
Like, just tell me that you're, you know, following the narrative. Maybe Lara only has girlfriends, or, you know, maybe you just didn't. There were no female assassins in the world that you're creating, because you are creating a world in a video game.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Although it's modeled after real experiences, real historical events, it's still Ubisoft's world. So if your narrative doesn't include female assassins, that's fine. Be honest about it. Don't say, oh, we thought about it, but then we were just like, money.
Yeah.
Like,
well, but here's the thing. If you have Alex Amancio never having had Assassin's Creed Unity with any expectation of any kind of new characters, say, we originally planned to include some new assassin characters, but the reality of production made adding the additional characters too costly, nobody bats an eye.
Yeah.
This is not about whether or not Ubisoft could afford to create new characters or not. And you alluded, Scott, to Jonathan Cooper, who actually works on Naughty Dog, and he had worked on Assassin's Creed 3.
That's the
is guy, the one who yep. said, I estimated to be a day or two's work, mm-hmm. not a replacement of 8,000 animations. Mm-hmm. But all Ubisoft is saying is, you know what? We had new characters. We wanted to put them in. At the end of the day, we had to make a decision to cut it off and not include those new characters. So what the controversy is about is, why weren't there female characters before? Why did you raise the expectation that we would get them? And then only the female characters are the ones eliminated from this. And it goes to what you're saying, Jocelyn. This is a conversation about women in video games.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. The whole thing, I don't know. These things are always so rubbing me wrong ways for lots of reasons. And I hope sometimes we tend to swing too far the other way and lose sight of where real equality is. The problem is guys who think they are taking a position of knowledge really can't, because they're not in the minority position on this. So they don't really know. They can't really relate to it. Every game I ever play has a dude I can play in it. It's just the way it is.
Plenty of male people of color who would understand that.
No, absolutely. They were. Absolutely. And that's my whole point. I'm pasty white guy trying to, you know, live in this world and navigate it and figure it out. But at the end of the day, I just wish they would have been honest. I would have even appreciated something that was even not sexist per se, but just say, yeah, it just didn't occur to us that it would be that important. And maybe that at least sheds light on the fact that, yeah, we need to make it more important. There needs to be a cultural change within the companies or something.
I think they were being honest, and that exposes the underlying problem, right?
Yeah. You know,
they're saying, like, We understand that in the past these games have been horribly misrepresentative, and we wanted to include female characters, but like any video game, at a certain point new features had to get cut, and we cut those new features. So the questions are, well, why did you prioritize other features over these features?
Yeah.
And then the general longer conversation of, why has it taken so long to get any kind of female characters and representative characters in there?
Yeah.
I think you think women don't buy video games.
Well, and maybe they do. The problem is we now have metrics where we can actually measure that, you know, like it's so much more digital now that you know who's buying games, that it's not just that who's the nameless, faceless person who picked it up in Walmart.
Yeah, the problem is that the women who buy video games people think that it's moms buying for their kids, their boy kids, and it's not. Mm. There's lot of us out here that are playing these games. Mm. And like I said, I completely agree with Jocelyn. Narratively speaking, make sense. That's fine with me. I have no problem with, like I said, with Harry Potter being a boy.
Mm-hmm.
But this is complicated, and I think they're scared. And this is a complicated conversation that you cannot have via Twitter.
Right. Oh, I completely agree. And there was, I mean, I don't know if you followed the Blizzard stuff a few weeks ago. Some sort of side comments that Rob Pardo had made at an event that were kind of taken to the extreme. And then he went on vacation and didn't pay attention to what was happening on Twitter, and it kind of blew up in his face. And and came back and tried to re-explain, no, we know there's not enough diversity in the industry. And this was more about representation in the industry, not so much in the games. But they lead one to the other. If you have more, let's see, you've got more girls, more ladies working in the business and providing their perspective on all levels of programming up to direction to whatever, that will have an effect on the actual game output itself. The problem is dudes who want to be all dude bro about this issue are digging in because they...
But that's just a comp... I mean, that happens every time you push out.
I agree. You know? I agree. But what I guess what I'm saying is we're not going to hear the end of it. That's all I'm saying. No.
Yeah. Well, I hope not, because we have to keep talking about this because we have to make some changes.
Yeah.
It's important. I mean, I was really focused. I mean, I saw the announcement, but I was really focused on the Rainbow Six Siege stuff.
Yeah.
Because I know the game designer for that.
Yeah.
And then after the fact, I heard like, oh, I can't believe it was a female hostage. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I think this pendulum is swinging back and forth really fast all of a sudden.
Kind of wildly, yeah. That part I don't like because there needs, whatever, it's the internet. Clearer heads are never going to prevail, but.
That game Siege looks amazing.
It looks amazing, yeah. I can't wait to play it. It's going to be great. I have a lot of friends that had real issues with that trailer, and again, it was based on, they felt like it was specifically victimizing this woman as a hostage. And I just thought, well, all right, put a dude in there. You know, like that didn't seem to be a thing where it was overt. In fact, if anything, you're now complaining, like if it was just all dudes and dude hostages, would somebody go, well, where are my female hostages?
I sure as hell heard a girl talking on the team. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know.
Sometimes you can win, sometimes you can't, but the whole thing's kind of it turned out to be a bigger mess this week than I think any of these companies intended. And that's fine. It's all good in the end. But let's talk about what actually happened. About games anyway, and well, just see if anyone
has any thoughts.
I know what you mean though, like the other stuff, less controversial stuff.
The actual video game stuff. So my take on it is basically this, and this is quick. Microsoft showed a lot of games. They spent no time on Kinect or 360. They didn't even mention Kinect as compared to last year, which was all Kinect all day. And this was a very big shift from that. It was also, it felt kind of contrite to me. But part of that is my own bias toward, you know, how this all went down last year and how...
I think that was intentional, though.
Probably, but it was a lot easier for me to sense, I think, because I was paying very close attention to that, whereas others may have just said, oh, a great focus on games, Microsoft, good job. I was like, some subtext here about them not doing that enough last time. But anyway, other than everything and its dog getting delayed to 2015 or being planned for 2015, I think they had a good conference. I think Sony's was great at moments and really weirdly dumb at other moments. Too many numbers talked about in that conference. But they also showed the most anticipated thing of the year for me, which is...
Raj Dayud had the same issue. He's like, yeah. I fell asleep in the middle for 30 minutes.
So bad. So bad. It was terrible. And that guy had Bob Dole hands, which is boring in itself. But anyway, I don't mean his hurt hand from the war. I mean, the way he moved his... he had political hands. Let's put it that
Bob
way.
Bob Dole doesn't like it when you make fun of his hands.
No, Bob Dole says... Sony brought out independent developers. I forgot their names. They did Joe Danger, but their game No Man's Sky looks insane. If it's even close to real, it may
every player gets a brand new unpopulated planet to begin. I can't wait,
dude. This I thought of you. I went, Tom will love this.
Oh yeah,
right up your alley. We love that sci-fi kind of vibe they're invoking there. Everything about it is just I'm beyond stoked. But the big surprise for me with all of this was Nintendo's digital thing they did, non-stage presentation. I ended up really liking that, like a lot. Now, you and I had a conversation on Wednesday, and I don't know how much we want to hit on that again, but I feel like that was good. Like, for me as a gamer, it may not have been good for me if I was an industry buyer or, you know, a Best Buy rep or whatever. Actually, I guess they're really in bed with Best Buy now, but generally, say I was a Walmart dude, that may have not have worked on me as well because they weren't talking to me. They were talking to gamers more. But I really liked it. It made me kind of wish everybody would do one of those, even if it was in addition to their stage stuff. I thought that stuff was great. And they have a lot of games I'm excited about, like, New Zelda and other games.
Yoshi's Woolly World was the cutest thing I've ever seen.
Don't you think it should be called Yoshi's Yarn, though?
Well, I think they're trying to get away from Kirby, don't you think?
Maybe. But, like, Jocelyn, you agree, right?
Oh, yeah. alliteration. Because so don't you think
yarn, dude? Yoshi's yarn. It's perfect. Why? It's perfect. What were they thinking? Yep. But that's a nitpick. But
didn't like it.
Wait a minute. Why not? Come on. You're dead inside.
It just looked boring to me.
Oh. I mean, there is that. It's not something I would pick up.
It's and to be fair, just not my type of game. Maybe.
Right. Right. I like their weird, like Kirby's Epic Yarn, was it called?
Yeah.
I loved that. Yeah. And it was the same kind of game.
I just feel like they're starting to go like random household item plus old Nintendo character, paper, Mario, yarn,
what's in the pantry?
Yeah.
What's in the linen closet?
Damn it.
How can we combine this with Zelda next?
That's a pretty good point.
Zelda Bleach coming soon.
Nobody has actually brought that point up, but that is a really good point. They are doing that, aren't they? They're taking
pointing at things around
household them. Objects and then one of their famous characters and making a game out of it. Now I can't think of it any other way.
It's the Luigi Sponge game.
When you're trying to create something and you're, you know, walking around, rambling around your house, trying to get an idea to pop into your head. And, oh, here's this sweater.
Yeah.
That'll work. Look at that. Because if you looked at the backgrounds of that section of the announcement, it was all like folded knitted cloth and stuff. I just thought it was great. I mean, I'm totally a Little Big Planet fan, though. And
sure.
It just plugs right into me. I couldn't have cared less about the what's the fighty thing with the Link.
Hyrule Warriors. Yeah. I don't care about that either.
Because that's like,
yeah, I couldn't be bothered because it's Dynasty Warriors. I mean, and that game is for some people. Mutual friend Mark Spagnolo loves those games, so he's probably pretty stoked. But I could care less about that series. But let's go around the horn real quick and just talk about the game we're probably most excited about. If you had to pick one from the entire show, for me, it's Big No Man's Sky. But also, I at least have to throw that. What is it? Oh, crap. The new Civilization spinoff in space that's like Alpha Centauri, but they can't use the name. I forgot the name of it.
Civilization?
Civilization Beyond or something.
Beyond Earth. Tom and I are both like, they're Civ?
Oh, you didn't know about this? You guys didn't hear about this?
No, I knew there was Civilization, but I thought it was just called Civilization. I thought they were going back to...
No, it's called Civilization Beyond Earth. And this is all future. It's all leaving Earth and it's all new planets. And it looks... I mean, if anyone had ever played the old Alpha Centauri game, Sid Meier's
coming
Alpha Centauri,
to Linux.
Yeah, coming to everything this later this year. I'm equally excited about that. But if I had to pick one, and it's as much as the new Zelda game looks amazing, and I'm kind of jonesing for that, and all these other kind of games, I think I'm most excited about No Man's Sky. That just looks insane to me. So let's go around the horn. Corinne, what do you care about most?
This is like when you go out to dinner with friends and you can't decide what you want on the menu.
Yeah.
Like come to me last, you know?
Right.
Actually, I was a little bit bored with all of it, to be honest. I thought that the Halo 5 stuff looked interesting. I don't play Halo, but I thought the Master Chief Collection was kind of I'm sure lots of people are going to be really happy about that, but it felt like to me that was such a marketing move because what's going to sell that is going to be the chance to get into the beta.
Yeah. And it's just, it's a nostalgia play and a beta access play for sure. In both those cases. Yeah.
They're all starting to run together in my mind, but there was one that was like a little indie. I think it was that indie at Xbox, section of the Microsoft thing.
Oh, Cuphead.
What
you're talking about? That looks like a 1920s cartoon. That
yes,
one.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
I was like, I haven't looked that up yet, but that looked awesome.
No, you
like,
should see the whole trailer. You'll be twice as excited as you are now because they didn't show near enough of that. That looks so crazy cool.
That looks so cool, and everybody because we were watching it at work because we just do, and so there was like eight of us in here, and we all went when we saw that part. So it was very cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about that one too. Jocelyn, what do you think?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm a huge Zelda fan, so I was very excited when I saw that trailer. And then when they released later on that was like actual in-game footage, I was like, no.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It's really, really pretty.
Especially that bit where they're showing the big field and he's on the horse, like out in the middle of the field. That just looked insane. Yeah. That looked really
good. It looked really good. And I like the idea that they're going with because I really enjoyed Link Between Worlds. Mm-hmm. And that was much more exploratory and you could do dungeons in any order. And that's what most Zeldas up till now have been been missing. Mm-hmm. So I think going back to that, this new Zelda is going to be really great. But I think for me, the thing I was most excited about was probably The Order. I think that that game looks really, really, really cool.
Yeah, it does. It looks really cool. I mean, if it's just all shooter, I that may cool me a little bit, chill me a little bit on it. But aesthetically speaking, that thing looks just freaking insane. Looks beautiful.
It does. Yeah. And it's coming soon, you know, like August. It's not coming in 2015. I can get excited about it.
It got delayed. She hadn't heard. I hate to break it to you. Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, no.
2015.
Damn, everything is 2015 now.
Probably March-ish is my guess, but yeah, totally not happening this year now. So I know.
Well, screw it. It's not my pick anymore.
Yeah. I am looking forward to Destiny, which is still this year. So October, you'll be getting Destiny. Not. And I'm really?
Oh. Well, I'm not a big Halo fangirl. I played through all the Halo games right before Halo 4 as part of a whole video series that we did. And then I got to Halo 4 and I was like, beat it in a week and took it back. I was like, I'm never touching another Halo
game.
But
you like Borderlands, right?
Eh.
No.
I still haven't beat either one of those games.
fair enough. I mean, they're not for everybody, obviously, but Destiny has me jonesing for it. I'm pretty excited. Tom, what's your... Thanks.
Well, you guys named all of them.
Yeah, I know. That's
Splatoon. I'm actually curious about Splatoon. It comes to the Wii U, and it's a first-person shooter with paintballs, so it's family-friendly.
Yeah.
And you can swim through your own paint, but then you get sucked in like quicksand into the paint of other players.
It's the squid one where you get a squid or whatever.
Yeah, you get to turn into a squid. Civilization, totally excited for.
Yeah.
No Man's Sky, totally excited for. Yeah. Open-ended Zelda, way excited for.
Yeah.
And Destiny, I actually pre-ordered.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I'm not a big first-person shooter fan, though, but that just looked gorgeous.
What'd you pre-order for? Which machine?
So PS4.
I'll do that, too.
So I get in the beta.
Yeah, let's play together. What the hell?
Yeah.
Oh, that game is great.
I want the white one. I don't care about the game. I just want the white PlayStation.
Yeah, dude.
The bundle, nice.
That is really pretty. That makes me wish I had that, but too late. I got black. All right. Well, I think that's good. I feel like we covered a lot of the stuff, and there's plenty of other talk in and around the Frogpants Network and elsewhere about E3. So we didn't want to go into every stinking detail, but there it all is. Hey, our good friends at Squarespace.com are sponsoring this show as well today. Squarespace, it's a place where you go and make a website. Thinking to yourself, hey, I want to make a fan site for the Commodore 64. Well, why not? Nobody's stopping you. You can just go do it and be a part of it and make it happen. We love these guys. It's super easy. Make a portfolio, a blog. You can sell stuff. It's all very mobile friendly. So you want it to look good on tablets and phones. Boom. It's already sort of built in to do that. My favorite part is they let you do a trial without any credit card. You just go sign up. You try it. And if you like it, save some money by using the code CURRENT at checkout. That's CURRENT, CURRENT at checkout. Next time you head over there to squarespace.com.
America scores and wins.
Oh, boy. We're running a little late, but we're going to do the quiz anyway. And I'm very excited about this because you two.
You can totally skip my part. Give me 2 points and go on to Jocelyn.
Forget it. You're doing them. In fact, you're first. So sit back, relax, and enjoy your Doctor Who trivia from the old Doctor Who. These are all questions from old Doctor Who. Nothing new, none of the new Doctors, any of that. This is like 60s era stuff. Are you ready for that?
Maybe.
Maybe, just a little bit? All right.
I'm a little scared. Actually, Tom, can you be my phone-a-friend?
I have to sit in judgment upon your answers, Corinne, or else I would.
That's right. There's no there's nothing you can do about it.
I have a sacred gavel.
Real. I am no expert. I love it. I love it.
All right. If you get your answer correct, this will happen. If you get it wrong, this will happen. And Jocelyn, you just sit there and sweat until it's your turn. Here is your questions. Corinne, are you ready to go?
Yes.
All right. What was the air date for the very first episode of Doctor Who?
Something, something, 1964.
You are incorrect. November 23rd, 1963. 63. Very close. What is the title for the pilot episode of Doctor Who?
An Unearthly Child.
You are correct. Nicely done. That was quick.
And a half point extra for a speed of response.
Yeah, that was really good. Next up, what storyline introduced the Cybermen?
Oh, crap. sorry.
It's all right.
I don't remember.
It is the 10th planet. The 10th planet.
Dang it.
You knew that, I'm sure.
Would have been worth a point for each planet.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Yeah. 10 points right there. Jeez. Okay. Next one up. Who was the second doctor replacing William Hartnell?
Patrick Troughton.
You are correct. Nicely done. Who was the first female producer on Doctor Who?
Verity Lambert.
Oh, man. Very fast and nicely done.
The lady doth protest too much.
I know that.
Next up, what episode marks the first appearance of the Daleks?
The second series is called The Daleks. Or the... What is it called? The series is The Daleks.
Yeah. What's the episode?
But I just stop talking right now.
You're close, but also wrong. It's episode 2. It is called The Daleks or The Daleks, but it doesn't say anything about season. So, Tom, what do you want to do with that one?
No, that's actually full point because all of the episodes were parts of the same title back then.
All right.
So they have season, series, and episodes.
All right. Parts is parts.
Yeah. They did like 4-part series for each episode.
All right. Fair. I'm going to take your word for it. The doctor was the scientific advisor to what organization?
UNIT.
Oh, man, that was fast. That stands for the United Nations.
You get an extra unit. That's 1/10 of a point.
United Nations Intelligence Task Force and or Unified Intelligence Task Force. Kind of goes both ways. Final question. What is the iconic catchphrase of the Daleks?
Exterminate.
You are correct. Nicely done.
That actually, because you said it in a Dalek voice, exterminates 1/10 of a point.
Wow.
Sadly.
Good heavens. All right. There's no hiding, Jocelyn.
Oh, man.
Be ready.
I'm not going to do that well.
You're going to do just fine. These are
hit it very hard.
These are Hearthstone questions, which means you know everything about Hearthstone. I'm not worried
about
you.
They're going to kick me off the show if I don't get everything right. I hope you realize
that's
that.
That's all good.
Did you see Garrett and Dill's performances previously? You're fine.
They didn't do great. Although I guess Dill
doesn't. To be fair to Garrett, I knew some of those StarCraft questions. I was like yelling into my phone.
You did? Well, see, you're totally going to get this. You're going to be fine. So here's your first question. What card do you get after getting all the pirate cards in the game?
I don't own any pirate cards.
No, that actually is a 1/10 of a point because she does not own any pirate cards.
All right, fair enough. Captain's Parrot was the answer, by the way.
Oh.
Next up, what card sets a player's health to 15 when played?
Alexstrasza.
Very nicely done. That was quick, too. Next one. Who illustrated the fairy dragon card? This is going to seem like it's hard because there's so many artists.
I swarm so hard in the face.
I know. It's a hard one, but if you go
she's
with
gonna
the
play a rush deck at you, Iceworm.
I will give you a hint.
Mr. Jack?
You can go easy on this. You can say what should be the obvious answer if you were to go back 20 years in Blizzard's history. I may be giving it
someone at Blizzard.
Chris Metzen.
You are incorrect. Samwise Didier is the artist. He's been there the whole time. When the Illidan Stormrage card is played against a druid, what does Illidan's card say?
Hello, brother.
Nicely done. See,
yeah, and another 10th point for a quick answer.
She played that game a lot. What did the rogue's hero power do before getting nerfed?
Oh, man, I wasn't in the beta before the nerf.
And they talked about it 2 episodes ago and you were still sick.
And I was sick. Oh, man, I need to listen when I'm not on. A tutu dagger?
I'll give you you're so close. I'll give you one of these though.
Jill.
A Jill from Barry. It was
you get 1/10 of a Jill point.
Allowed
for that.
The player to equip a 1/2 dagger, not a 2/2.
That's right. Gonna be a half point thing.
Yeah,
she said
that's pretty close. Yeah. That's all daggers though. So.
I was trying to think of what would be way OP.
dagger.
Here's one for you. How many Murloc cards are there in the game? Total.
12.
Oh, 11.
Oh, man.
So close. So close. Second to last question. How many ranked wins do you need to win? Need with a class to unlock the golden version of that hero?
500.
Ooh. Very well done. Final question. What is the most useless paladin secret card in the game?
Oh, see, I know what the right answer is, but I really don't want to say it. Oh, I'm sure Ice Swarm thinks it's eye for an eye.
You are correct. Is that the wrong answer?
You know what? You're going to get not only a point for answering, but an extra point for bravery and dealing with Iceworm trolling you in a question.
Yeah, I totally trolled you. So now that we have these numbers and Tom has done his weird scoring system and added them all up, Tom, how'd they do?
Now that I have consulted the Book of Rules and accurately assessed the answers and their points awarded thereof, we have Jocelyn with 5.6 and Corinne with a mirror 6.5.
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations to both of you. Let's celebrate with this and say that you did a good job.
How about a boobie?
There you go. All right. Whoops. There's the mirror. Now play us out, music. You guys did great. We're going to jump straight to emails. We got one here from Jason Brown. He wrote in from Brian, or Brian, Tom, how do you say that name?
Down there? Well, Scott, it's probably Dahmer Scott of Maine.
You know why I did that? Because whenever I screw words up, it's always Brian I go to fix them.
I know. That is a horrible Brian Ibbot impression.
Terrible. That is the worst Ibbot I've ever heard. Hey guys, I was listening to your discussion about self-driving cars in episode 18, and while I completely agree with Brecky that a few bad accidents early on could fuel public fears against self-driving cars, I can think of at least one way for manufacturers to proactively temper the bad PR. I propose auto manufacturers set up an incentive program on their leased vehicles where, in exchange for a break on your payments, they get to install a couple of cameras that consistently and constantly record everything that happens around the vehicle. Whenever the vehicle's car is in a collision, or whenever the car is in a collision, collision avoidance algorithms are triggered for a severe enough event. A 1 to 2 minute video clip is automatically transmitted back to the manufacturer showing what happened. They could very quickly build a stockpile of hundreds of videos where autonomous cars are prevented prevented accidents by reacting more quickly than a human driver could do to dangerous situations caused by cars on the road. That's very interesting. It's like a preemptive, hey, there'll be accidents, but look how much better we are at reacting to them than a human would be. It says, obviously, there are some technical difficulties to overcome with such a system, i.e. car manufacturers might have to work out an OnStar / WhisperNet style deal with the cell phone companies to allow internet access for uploading the video. But I do believe it would be a very good use of their advertising budget if they want the technology to succeed. Cheers, it says Jason in Maine. That's an interesting take. What do you think? Maybe? Plausible? No? Maybe? Somebody? Anybody? Corinne, what do you say? What do you think?
Well, I am so excited about this idea about self-driving cars because my parents are kind of getting to the age where if we really get these in 6 years or whatever Google said, then that's really going to help my parents. Not that I'm going to put my parents in cars that are going to crash, but I mean, they're already in cars that can crash, right?
Right.
But I think that it's interesting to proactively show what the cars can do when there is an accident. I don't know if you guys have talked about this before, but I just watched the Google, it's the video like that shows them how they're actually handling all of the obstacles.
Right.
That made me feel a lot better about this because it seemed like that's what this is doing. It's like it's really looking at objects in a really different way. And I think that will help. I think he's right, though. I think Jason is right. I think that there's going to be a lot of PR work that's going to have to go into it.
Jocelyn, you live in Canada. You guys have cars up there, right? You have cars.
We do have cars, but we don't have nearly enough people to have actual traffic. So the only thing we really hit is deer.
I see. So the deer
that's
problem.
Not true. I've been in traffic in Vancouver. Not that a Canada exists, but I've been in traffic in Vancouver.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe you about Canada having a place called Vancouver. I don't believe any of this. But Jocelyn, if the idea of, I mean, this has been a big topic in the last couple of weeks on our show, but the idea of self-driving cars, how's that sit with you guys? And do you think these measures would help your confidence in having a robot do it all?
I think I have complete confidence in a robot doing everything as long as there's still a steering wheel that I can grab and override.
See? This is what I said last time, and everybody dismissed me for this, but I really believe that that's some old man notion that I need to have some manual override, but I still think it would be important.
Yeah, no, I think it would be very important. I think Corinne is right in that we're going to need some sort of PR to get people on board. I think that Jason's idea is a little bit, it seems like a really big investment for them to put this kind of a system into a mass-produced vehicle, you know? Like, to make this widely available, this camera system, seems like a little bit of overkill, maybe?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. The nice thing is, we may someday be in a future, and Tom, you can speak to this maybe as my futurist friend, but you've been there. You've come back from the future. You know what's happening.
I've visited.
The idea that these that this would be during a time when we get to this point, I feel like it'll be during a time when internet is no longer just sort of limited to do I have coverage here or is my ISP working, but maybe by then, maybe 6 years is too soon, but somewhere in the next 10 years, maybe we're in a place where there's internet and Wi-Fi and sort of connectivity type things just everywhere. It's just in the air.
Even if there's not, like, you're at home with your Wi-Fi often enough, most people are anyway, that it could just upload those videos later.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Wouldn't have to upload them in real time, because I think the genius of the idea is that the car company can then collect a bunch of these to show propaganda style, like, but look at all of these accidents that were avoided. I think that would be compelling.
Propaganda style. All right. On that note, can't believe that just came out of me. So we're gonna end it here. But before we do, I cannot thank our guests enough for being here. You guys were awesome.
Yay! Absolutely.
You're on the comeback list now. Does the gavel agree, Tom?
Yes, it does. All right. Motion approved.
All right. Motion approved. Let's just go around the horn and see where you guys are and what you're doing. Jocelyn, where can people find more Jocelyn Moffat on the internet?
Best place to find me is actually over on Amove TV. That is Garrett's network, and that's where I do the Angry Chicken every Monday night and the Gamers Inn every Friday night. So Angry Chicken, as most of you probably know, is all about Hearthstone, and then Gamers Inn is just a general gaming podcast. So it's a whole lot of fun. Again, that's amove.tv.
Cool, and I can't wait
to
see you in a couple
weeks. What time is the Gamers Inn on Friday?
Yeah.
Gamers Inn on Friday is 8:30 Eastern.
So right now when we're doing our thing, normally on Fridays.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Normally. Yeah. You totally took my time slot.
Yeah.
But I'm not bitter.
We did, no, didn't we?
8:30 is 5:30 Pacific.
No, it's, wait. 6:30, 7:30,
and we're at 4 to 5. So it's the perfect post current geek show.
Oh, well, that means you can come on again. Fantastic. Corinne, where can people find you more?
Well, I sort of do. I don't really do Twitter. I'm a lurker on Twitter.
Yeah.
But if you want to know more about the University of Utah and our number 2 ranked program in the country, it's eae.utah.edu, and all of the cool stuff that we do that is there.
Who's number 1? You don't have to say, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you. Okay. It's because they have so much more money than us. It's USC.
Oh,
so,
USC's got you beat. All right.
Yeah, we were 1 last year, and we're fighting it out.
All right, good. I like
Super
it.
It's a,
my son and my daughter, my youngest two, are at all week this week and most of next week are at a 3D modeling animation camp up there, and they are loving it. So yeah, it's a really, really cool program.
Yeah, it's good.
Tom, anything from you, sir?
Yeah, I keep harping on about the Sword and Laser Anthology. I know a lot of you probably already picked it up. I hope you enjoyed it. 20 sci-fi and fantasy stories, 10 of each from the Sword and Laser podcast book club audience. But I wanted to mention extra that the Kindle version is now available. Some people were waiting for that to show up in the Kindle store. So if you go to Amazon.com, you can search for it there, or you can find links to all the versions at swordandlaser.com/store.
If you're coming to Nerdtacular, you will see all 4 of us there. Corinne will be there. Jocelyn will be there. I'll be there. Tom will be there. And so many more people will be there. We have great stuff planned. Incredible bunch of panels. The gaming room is really shaping up to be amazing as well. All kinds of prizes and swag and fun and great stuff in Snowbird, Utah. So the tickets are gone. You can't buy any more of those. But if you're coming, come. Let's have a ball. Let's have a good time. I can't wait. It's going to be great. If I had one thing to pimp, it would be the Diablo show. I do those every weekend, and there are a series of 12, at least initially, that I'm doing, and I'm having as much fun with that as I have anything I've ever done. And I don't exactly know why, but I have a lot of passion for Diablo, and that's probably most of it. So if you're interested in that, do check that out at frogpants.com/Diablo. I want to thank Andrew Allen for our theme. On Twitter, you can find us at Current Geek, at Scott Johnson, at Ace Detect. Currentgeek.reddit.com is our Reddit, and on email, send it to currentgeek@gmail.com. The website is currentgeek.com. That'll do it for us. We'll see you guys next time.
Hello there, and welcome to another installment of This Week in Comics. I'm Aaron Steinberg, and I'm here to take you through the good, the bad, the new, and the noteworthy in the world of comics. As usual, my reviews may contain spoilers, so tread carefully. My pick of the week this week is the second issue of the recently relaunched Miles Morales, The Ultimate Spider-Man. This issue deals with the aftershock of Miles finding out that, in typical comic fashion, Peter Parker is somehow back from the dead and standing in his bedroom. On top of that, Miles is still trying to find the right words to tell his girlfriend that he is in fact Spider-Man. The issue is dialogue-heavy, character-driven, and full of meaningful moral implications. All things that series writer Brian Michael Bendis excels at, and makes everything flow very smoothly from scene to scene. Overall, I give this issue a B+ for bringing amazing moments between characters, heavy moral dilemmas, and masterfully crafted dialogue. For more relish on your comic book Frankfurter, you can find me on the web at www.epiccomicshow.com and on Twitter at Epic Comic Show. Until next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we continue our review of the legal battle brewing between Wizards of the Coast and Cryptozoic by looking at the merits of the patent claims against Hex. Let's begin with the basics. Patents that are issued by the PTO are effectively 20-year monopolies rewarded for innovation, but the monopoly is limited to just the specific numbered claims at the end of a patent. There are 57 claims in the Magic patent, but four of them stand out to me as real problems for Hex. The first two recite a card game and a computer card game, requiring only obtaining a hand of cards, playing a card, and designating a card by rotating it to a different orientation, aka tapping. Another of the broad claims recites obtaining a hand of energy or mana components and effect components, and then using the energy components or mana to play the effect cards. The last of the broadest claims describes selecting a library of cards and displaying it on a single computer screen, then executing turns of a game and showing the cards played on multiple computer screens. Very basic TCG rule sets. It seems likely that the close clone of rules and operations that Hex is using will infringe at least these broad claims, so Hex will likely need to fall back on the other defense to patent infringement, arguing that Wizards' claims are too broad and therefore invalid. Of course, that will require finding prior art from before 1993 on these points, and the TCG market was not really in existence before Magic, so that could be difficult. The bottom line is, at least on the patent claim, the makers of Hex should likely settle as soon as possible. The expected loss on the patent claim could be devastating, if not fatal, to the game. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy. If you want to hear more about this case and other similar topics, please check out my upcoming seminars at Origins Game Fair in June and at Gen Con in August.
Welcome to another iteration of The Geekly Scholar. I'm Rich Stroffolino, and each week I'll be highlighting an article with a geeky focus written with scholastic rigor. In a recent essay for The Guardian, author Will Self makes a seemingly trite observation about the death of the novel. This statement is hardly new. Luminaries from Walter Benjamin to Roland Barthes have begun this discussion decades ago. The piece entitled, "The Novel is Dead, This Time for Real," links the decline of the novel to a very specific cause, the obsolescence of its medium. This is the crux of the matter for Self. If people will predominantly consume literature on internet-connected devices at some time in the near future, Self cites 20 years, and readers will want to maintain connectivity during reading, the novel cannot survive as a popular medium for high literature, recessing to a niche and becoming classical, much as orchestral music has been relegated. Self cites the work of cultural critic Marshall McLuhan, writing in the 1950s, effectively predicting that in the coming years, information can be accessible beyond an individual subject, that it could be held and released at a distance. He didn't know it, but this could be a description of the internet, describing cloud storage and high-speed access. The novel is exactly the opposite. The great works of the form are as informational as they are narrative, an example being that there's no better guide to the realities of whaling than Moby Dick. McLuhan was one of the first to propose that the medium is the message, that the content bent itself around the form, and for Self, this is why the novel is dead, or at least terminal. The medium of its transmission is passé. So where does literature go if the novel is dead? Self does not set out to answer this question, but for a look at post-human literature, and yes, I know that term is pretentious, I direct listeners to Writing Machines by Catherine Hayles. This article is rife with British diction, and Self at times needs to be told, yes, we know you're smart. But the piece is so fascinating, I can't help but recommend it. I'm Rich, and this was The Geekly Scholar. If there's an article I need to check out, or you want links to the pieces I've highlighted, Check out my Twitter feed at Mr. Anthropology.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.